for any newbie or beginner to real estate investing, the biggest piece of the puzzle is the mindset and educational piece at the beginning. Once you get that going for you, then you start to feel like you have a train that's building momentum, and then everything else becomes easier.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
It's Dave Lindahl with another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab, and today my guest is Tyler Raymond. Tyler, tell everybody who you are, where you're from.
Hey, thanks, Dave, for having me. Great to be here. My name is Tyler Raymond from Los Angeles, California. I am 26 years old, and I got involved with RE Mentor and thus real estate investing around mid-2020. So I've been in for about 2.5 years.
2.5 years. I understand that you have a part in an 88-unit project?
Correct, yes.
Talk about how that came about.
Great question. Long story short, reaching out, calling people, and making relationships. I played a small role in that deal, but I was essentially able to bridge the gap and bring a little bit of money to the table to help take down that syndication.
Awesome. So how's that deal going?
Great. We've been in it for almost a year now. It's 88 units in Wichita Falls, Texas.
Oh, Wichita Falls. You know, there's so many times that we put deals under contract. Well, didn't put them under contract, but went into negotiating sessions in Wichita Falls, and it never came through. So when you say Wichita Falls, I think, oh yeah, three deals. There's also Wichita Falls, Kansas.
And yes.
Same thing happened with two deals over there. So I think we're snake bit with anything named Wichita Falls. So what's interesting about you and your dad is the fact that you guys did a pivot, and you pivoted over to assisted living.
Correct.
So let's talk about that pivot, what you saw and how you got started over there. I understand you got a couple of deals under your belt right now in the process of getting more.
Yeah, exactly. So this kind of goes back to my origin story, if you will, mid-2020, really crazy climate to be in real estate investing for anyone, but especially for someone like myself that's young and learning the ropes, if you will, trying to figure out where to find success in such a competitive, uncertain environment was really challenging for me. So started off focusing on multifamily and just trying to be competitive with everyone else that was out there at that time, so much money moving around, I really struggled. And so I decided to focus my attention on a niche. That a niche happened to be assisted living. And one of the things that initially drew me to assisted living was that it seemed from the outside looking in that the profit margins were significantly higher than you could find elsewhere. So I started analyzing deals. I realized that some of the returns on paper seemed like they were going to be greater than multifamily. And eventually we found a facility or two and we decided to go forward with it.
So you kind of emphasized the word seemed. So after you got the deals, was there a realization?
Yeah, I think in general, in any aspect of business, nothing is as it seems at first. And once you peel back the layers of that onion, so to speak, you find out some of the nitty gritty that maybe you overlooked beforehand. So not to say that assisted living isn't what it seems, but being young and new to the game, I definitely didn't anticipate everything behind the curtain.
So what was behind that curtain? Because what I understand, I don't own assisted living myself. I've looked into it several times, but what I understand, it's a very operational intensive.
Exactly. That was exactly what I overlooked. I saw the returns on paper and I didn't quite realize the extent of the hands-on aspect of managing it that came with that.
So how did you overcome that? During the through experience, have you been able to like realize the returns that you thought were going to be there?
Definitely heading in the right direction. We're a little over a year into owning two facilities that we have, 20 beds total. And the main reason why we've been able to get to this point and we're starting to realize some of those returns now is because I am in a position where I'm able to be flexible. So the first 9 months or so of ownership, I probably spent half that time physically living out there and overseeing the operations myself. I should clarify that the facilities are in Denver, Colorado. And I was in Southern California at the time.
Oh, you're in LA. You a surfer?
Yes.
Oh, you are? Awesome. Where do you surf? Which beach?
At El Porto, right next to LAX, if you're familiar.
Oh, okay. No, I've never tried that. But next time you're out there and I'm out there, we should surf together. That would be awesome.
That would be great.
All right. So Did you plan on moving out there, or did you, all of a sudden you got into this and when the curtain dropped, it was like, this property needs me, I got to move?
Never anticipated that actually happening. Having said that, in order to get financing, we did have to put that into our business plan. So I did realize from day one that that could be a possibility. I just never thought that would actually happen.
Do you live on site, or did you just get an apartment somewhere?
No, I just got a month-to-month apartment somewhere.
All right. So what makes the operation so management intensive?
There's just so many different moving parts. And I should be more clear too. Assisted living is a very broad term. There's a lot of different niches within that niche. And so depending upon the population that you have in your assisted living facility, you have to cater to different needs. But in general, though, people are in assisted living because they have significant needs that need to be filled. And so with that, you have to make sure that you have the right staff and that you're able to supply the right help. And without getting into the details, into the weeds, there's just a lot that comes with that.
Interesting. So do you own three, or how many do you own right now?
Two homes total, a total of 20 beds.
And then do you have anything in the horizon that you're looking at?
Great question. I had to ask myself that same question earlier in the year. Now that I have a lot of experience with assisted living, do I want to continue to build out a portfolio in that asset class, or do I want to pivot? And so that is where I decided to pivot to something else that was similar to business layered onto real estate, but in something that was a little easier to remotely manage. And that is where self-storage comes into the picture for me. So right now, that is my focus.
So you're making a pivot to self-storage?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So assisted living is not it.
It is it for a lot of people, but for me and what I want to carve out for myself in a portfolio, I think that I can see a much better runway for myself in self-storage.
Is that the old adage that basically when you turn a unit in self-storage, you bring the broom and that's it?
Essentially, yes. No tenants, no toilets, no trash.
And no Mike Tysons.
Yes.
You know Mike Tyson is?
Yeah.
The holes in the walls. Because self-storage is made of brick.
Exactly.
That was our code word for somebody beat the hell out of this unit. It's a bunch of Mike Tysons there. All right. So let's talk about storage then. What attracts you over to the storage sector?
Similar to what I mentioned before, it's this unique intersection of business and real estate. In many ways, to use MFR as an example, there is a business component, but I don't think anyone would classify it as being a business when you own an apartment building. Well, I think it depends on what scale you're operating at. If you're in a syndication or you're running syndications, then you definitely have a business that you're running. But for the average investor that maybe owns a couple of residential units on their own,
yeah,
I don't know if the bank, let's say, would classify that as a business. Whereas
you're certainly not getting a business loan from the bank, but the way I've always run all of my properties, especially, and it all started with my small 3 to 6 unit properties, which I bought so many for the first 3 years because I was afraid to buy anything bigger. But I started getting really confused about when the bills came in and I was paying them with the wrong checkbooks. And all of a sudden I realized, like, wow, each one of these is its own business and I got to treat it like that. It had its own name. Back then I was doing trust before I jumped up to LLC. So it had its own trust. It had its own accounts. And as soon as I started doing that, then everything became orderly. But certainly when you jump up into larger apartment buildings, even 20 units or above, but definitely 100 units and above, those are businesses. There's just no doubt about it. You got a manager and the manager takes care of the tenants. I explain to people all the time that you're the owner of the property. You're not the manager of the property. You hire managers. It's just like if you owned like a Wendy's, right? You're not the person that's there handling the work behind the counter and making sure the fries get out hot. You're the person that's looking at the numbers and making sure that the turn rate's going and the amount of food's going out the door is important. Same thing with the apartment building. It's a business. You know, there's this great book out there called The E-Myth Revisited. You know, it's all about working on your business instead of in your business. And when you look at that business, when you look at a lot of things that you do in life, if you look at it that way, that's how you grow.
Sure. It's a great point. Maybe I should clarify then. I think the way that I was trying to phrase it is the internal versus the external. Internally, we have to operate any investment as a business, regardless of what investment it is, right? Externally, though, when you're looking at your clients, they're looking at your apartment building as a place of residence, not necessarily a place of business. Whereas your tenants for self-storage, it's not a place of residence. It very much is a business And thus, I think the expectations from the external are a little different with self-storage and assisted living in comparison to residential real estate. Is that a fair way to put that?
That was a very good rebuttal. Good rebuttal and clarification. So one of the things I have down here in my notes is that you are good at mindset and finding creative ways to get started when it's hard to gain traction. Talk about that.
Great point. Great question. I can't say that I'm good at it, but that is what most of my focus the last 2.5 years have been. For someone that was trying to get started in real estate investing at that point in time and being 23 years old, I had to get creative with my starting point. And so most of that initially, I think for any, I want to say newbie or beginner to real estate investing, the biggest piece of the puzzle is the mindset and educational piece at the beginning. And once you get that going for you, then you start to feel like you have a train that's building momentum, and then everything else becomes easier. But I think for most people getting started, those are the two hardest pieces to start with in order to build that momentum, education and mindset.
I'll agree with that. I also think that having educated people for the last 20 years, that mindset is even harder than the how-to, because the how-to, there's proven formulas for how-to. Mm-hmm. But with mindset, you're battling against something that has defeated you all of your life, basically, for those that don't have the abundance type of a mindset. And that person was me many years ago. So that's even harder, because once you become uncomfortable, you tend to snap back to where you were. And you don't even realize it. It's like these seemingly unimportant decisions are the reasons that many people just don't get ahead, because we're so used to immediate gratification. Mm-hmm. You know, getting immediate gratification, there's no short-term pain for long-term gain. And that's the way it should be. So what are some of the good mindset things that you've gone through or listened to or read?
Podcasts, books, phone calls. I don't think there's any wrong way to go about education.
Do you have one particular source or one particular book or one particular person that turns you around? For me, it was Earl Nightingale way back in the late 80s when somebody gave me an Earl Nightingale Lead the Field cassette that they found on the side of the road. And I listened to it. I was like, wow. It sounded pretty good. It sounded weird, but it sounded pretty good. But I actually took action on a couple of different things. Mm-hmm. And I got a test and things changed a little bit. I was like, damn, man. And then I got The Stranger's Secret. And then from there, it was Tony Robbins. He had just come out with Awaken the Giant Within. And that was it. I was off and running. So what about you?
Mentioning Tony Robbins, I've listened to a lot of his stuff, but I have to say the first book that comes to mind, Cashflow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki. For me, when I read that, everything just clicked in my mind and I hadn't turned back since.
That's like a mind shift book.
It is.
You know what I mean? There's mindset, which teaches you how to battle your own mind. And then there's the mind shift book that just allows you to look at things differently, the way that you should really be looking at stuff. And yeah, that book is, I didn't read that book for many, many years, but the book I did read by him, because I love the title, was Retire Young, Retire Rich. And when I saw that, I read through it, and it has a lot of the same principles as The Quadrant, but it was a really good book.
Mm-hmm. And most people know him by his first book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And so I think a lot of people have the tendency to throw that one out there. It's got to be one of the most well-received business books, I think, that have ever been written. But I would definitely have to go to Cashflow Quadrant as being more impactful for myself.
Yeah, that one book created a whole an empire for him. It's good stuff. So is there anything recently that you've been listening to or watching? Or for me, Joe Dispenza, he wrote the book Becoming Supernatural. Man, that book and Dave Asprey's book, Becoming Superhuman, but Superhuman is in the title. That book was so chock full of hacks that you can do for your life, for your brain, your body, for everything. It was one book that I started reading and I finished it the next day. It's like, it's one of those books. And I had so many highlights in that book that the amount of resources that he gave, I was just taking, it would take me years to get through them all, but there's so many good stuff in that book. And he plans to live to be 180. So if you want to live long and you want to live happy and you want to live healthy, people say, I can imagine living to be 180 because who wants to be old and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you're going to be 180 and young. When it does come time to die, you like die in a week or so or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you just stay young and healthy and you have a great time and a great life. Then Joe Dispenza's book is all about mindset. It's about the body. It's called The Quantum Field. And having elevated emotions, thinking about what you desire with an elevated emotion, while at the same time being in this meditative state that puts that signal out to the quantitative field. And if you read this book by Abraham Hicks called Asking Is Given, which is all about vibration as well, and that's really what the Supernatural book, Becoming Supernatural, is all about. It's all about the vibration that you send out there tracks the same vibration back. It's all really, really good stuff. What have you been listening to or studying lately?
The Comfort Crisis. I can't think of the author off the top of my head. I read this a month or two back, but if you look it up, I'm sure it'll be easy to find. It is not at all a business-oriented book, but it is definitely a mindset-oriented book. And if I could try and wrap it up into one or two sentences, in general, it preaches the almost necessity that we have as human beings to put ourselves in uncomfortable positions. And if we don't do that, then how are we ever expecting ourselves to grow? But essentially, it's saying, and whether it's physically, emotionally, mentally, or anything else, the more uncomfortable positions that we put ourselves in, the more prone to growth we are. And as a society right now, I think the psychology is a little reversed. There's so much technology out there these days that are supposed to make our lives easier, that are supposed to make our lives more comfortable. And I think we get caught in this mindset of wanting to be too comfortable for too long. And oftentimes that impedes our growth. So that's how I would preface that book.
I agree with that. What you're saying about all these different things that are being created through technology to make our lives more comfortable. I hadn't really thought about that. As I think about the fact that having, again, taught for 20 years, is one of the things I've realized is that if you're going to change, you need to get uncomfortable. And if you're going to be successful at anything, you've got to be willing to be uncomfortable for a little while. I created this phrase, it was be bad, get good, and master. But you've got to be willing to be bad at the beginning of anything and be uncomfortable until you get good at it. And then eventually you get good at it, it becomes a lot easier, and then it becomes fun and you master it. But most people are not willing to go to the be bad stage. And then the same thing with, well, it is the same thing. I call it swim lane. You're in your swim lane and you start moving out of your swim lane and becoming uncomfortable, and then you snap back into what it was that you were doing. Seemingly unimportant decisions that take place during the day. So give some advice to somebody who's young and getting started. What was it that you decided that I'm going to go into real estate? What did you do before real estate? And I got to ask you one question. I'm only asking this question because my father did the same thing. My father looked very, very young his entire life. What I was told, I used to see pictures of him, older pictures, and he had this mustache. He only had the mustache when he was younger. And I was like, yeah, why'd you wear a mustache? Why'd you wear a mustache anymore? And he says, I hated that mustache. He said, but I only wore it because I looked so young and I had to wear it so people would take me seriously and I can get jobs. So what about you and your mustache? Because you have a young looking face as well.
To a certain degree, that is same exact answer. Not only do I have a young looking face, but I certainly have a young sounding voice as well, which doesn't really help on the phone with brokers. But yes, in person, this definitely, in my mind at least, gives me a little bit more confidence, bumps me up a couple of years, I guess. But maybe you can give me some commentary there. Going back to your original question, though, this is interesting. It kind of brings me back full circle to RE Mentor and what you and your company has done for me and no doubt many others out there. To circle back around to the origin story, COVID hit March 2020, right? A couple months prior to COVID, I had just graduated college. I had a W-2 job lined up.
What did you study?
It was an interdisciplinary studies major, and I had two focuses. One focus was entrepreneurship. The other focus was outdoor adventure leadership. So two seemingly very different things.
Were you an Eagle Scout?
Something like that. I didn't actually do Eagle Scout, but in college, I was in a program that definitely mirrored Eagle and Boy Scouts. So anyways, the W-2 job I had lined up afterwards fell through. I was in this place of what the heck do I do? And referencing your father, my father actually comes into the picture, and he attended one, it was a half day live speaker event for RE Mentor. And he came back from that event and he said, Tyler, you got to check out RE Mentor. And over the next couple of weeks, we put in some research, figure out what exactly it is that you guys do, that you guys teach. And we decided together, while he was out of work as well at the time, to go into this side by side. And we put in a ton of research and education and went through and found a mentor with you guys. And that brought me into RE Mentor and into real estate investing as a whole. So it's interesting in that I didn't have a huge background in real estate before getting involved with RE Mentor. That was my breaking ground, if you will. And I think I'm kind of losing track of what the original question was, if you don't mind.
Being a young guy, what pivoted you into real estate investing, which you're explaining well?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it was more a matter of opportunity. And I decided if I was going to put my work and effort into something, I wanted it to be something that didn't have a ceiling.
It paid you what you were worth.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of multifamily investing. It'll pay you what you're worth.
Mm-hmm. And your time is not tied to money, which I think everyone can probably get behind that idea.
Absolutely. All right. We're going to play lightning round. All right. Before we do, I just want to do a plug. If you are somebody that's looking to learn how to become an active investor, go to rementor.com. We have a lot of different trainings there that will get you to where you want to go. If you just want to be passive now and you're looking to maybe invest in deals, you can go to passivefornow.com. That's a website that will show you the deals that we're doing right now. You don't necessarily have to commit to being an investor, but it will also give you an idea of what's going on out there in our marketplace. Or I find that the best passive investors are the ones that actually learn how to be an active investor before they start investing. It doesn't mean you have to start investing yourself, but at least you've gone through the process of knowing what decisions are being made by the active investors in order to have successful deals and what a successful deal looks like. So you can go to either one of those sites, rementor.com or passivefornow.com. All right, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Okay, it's called Lightning Round. Scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at keeping secrets?
10.
Godzilla or King Kong?
King Kong.
Who was your first celebrity crush?
Mila Kunis.
Who?
Mila Kunis.
Oh, where's she from?
I think she's from Russia.
Oh, I must be too old. Morning or night person?
Morning.
So you can go out there surfing?
Yeah.
Favorite pizza topping?
Pepperoni.
Are whoopie pies really pies?
No.
I'll tell that somebody from New England. Where's the place you want to most travel to?
The Alps.
Best business book you've read?
Cashflow Quadrant, Robert Kiyosaki.
Last Halloween costume?
Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man.
Oh, interesting. And the last question, do fish get thirsty?
No. I'm a little uncertain of that one, but.
All right. I want to thank you for being on our show, Tyler, and he's killing it out there. And this is a Multifamily Deal Lab. We'll see you next time.
Honored to be here. Thank you, Dave.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.